It is time for your KDNK local newscast. For this Wednesday morning, February 1st, I'm Steve Cole, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. It's already time to get excited about Mountain Fair. Carbondale Arts has announced that March 4th Marching Band will close out the weekend on Sunday night, July 30th. The theme for the 47th annual Carbondale Mountain Fair is water. President Trump's executive order on immigration boiled over at the state capitol Tuesday, with Democrats passing a symbolic resolution urging its repeal. Benta Berkland has more.
Even though it has nothing to do with state government, House Democrats such as Daphna Michelson-Janae of Commerce City felt it was important to take a stand.
We all want a vetting process that keeps out terror. I believe that. But we have a process that didn't happen.
Republicans say they're glad Trump is hitting the pause button. The mood took on a more hostile tone when one Democrat called the GOP hypocrites for not backing the resolution. Republican Ulan Willett of Grand Junction took exception with that criticism. He lost a cousin on 9/11.
These are tough issues, but folks, let's not call out and personalize because we differ on some of these issues.
The non-binding resolution passed on a voice vote. It will next be considered by the Republican-led Senate, where it is expected to fail. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
Science has been whipsawed by politics, and now with the new Trump administration, there may be another sharp swing to the right, threatening many protections to air and water. A former EPA scientist is deeply concerned that with Trump, science won't matter anymore. H2O Radio's Franny Halperin and Jamie Sudler have this report.
The word fracking didn't really enter the public's consciousness until about 2003 or so.
Fracking, which is short for hydraulic fracturing, is the process of pumping huge volumes of water, sand, and chemicals underground to release oil and gas.
The practice really got going in the early 2000s, and with that boom, some people began to notice changes to their water, changes that generated suspicion about the drilling method's safety as it spread across the country.
Because of the concern about its effects, Congress in 2010 directed the Environmental Protection Agency to study the relationship between hydraulic fracturing and drinking water.
5 years later, in the summer of 2015, the EPA released a draft report and press release, the latter of which made headlines for just one sentence.
The sentence read, "Hydraulic fracturing activities have not led to widespread systemic impacts to drinking water resources."
The statement was surprising because the report did in fact find specific instances where hydraulic fracturing activities had impacted drinking water resources
and had identified several pathways through which that risk of water contamination existed.
The contradictory language in the press release raised questions about who wrote it and why.
The EPA's own Science Advisory Board, or SAB, a group of outside academic researchers and scientists, noticed also. They said the statement of no systemic widespread impact couldn't be justified based upon information in the report itself.
I think the SAB made EPA walk back on that one. And frankly, it's really difficult to understand where that statement came from in the first place.
That's Dominic DiGiulio. He worked for EPA when it was investigating fracking in Pavilion, Wyoming, one of the study areas in the report. He's now working for an independent scientific research company.
I retired from EPA. The primary reason was so I could write a journal publication on the Pavilion groundwater investigation. So I wanted to make sure that that story was told and that the data was published in it in a peer-reviewed journal. And unfortunately, I needed to retire in order to do that.
EPA abandoned their investigation at Pavilion and at two other sites, one in Dimmock, Pennsylvania, and the other in Parker County, Texas. But why? DiGiulio says it wasn't because of the science.
The reasons for the abandonment, in my opinion, were not technically based. When I was with EPA, I made that clear to senior-level officials. I essentially read a statement that said that the decision to abandon the investigation was not based on technical reasons, that it could not be justified based on science.
The Science Advisory Board's criticism of the draft report seemed to be saying the same thing. In EPA's final report released this past December, the language about widespread and systemic impacts, it was gone.
The final findings showed conclusively how fracking can affect water and identified five hydraulic fracturing water cycle activities that in combination can contribute to those impacts.
The SAB was absolutely critical to the integrity of the report. really, you have to thank or be grateful for the Science Advisory Board, an independent science advisory committee, to have ensured that that was possible.
This time, but the EPA did a report back in 2004 that didn't have a science advisory board, and the outcome was very different.
In 2004, EPA concluded there was widespread hydraulic fracturing, injection of fracturing fluids into underground sources of drinking water, then somehow came up with the conclusion that there was no impact. You know, and you think, wait a minute, how is that even possible? The conclusions are not consistent with what's in the reports.
It was possible because the EPA negotiated directly with the gas industry before finalizing those conclusions, according to documents obtained by ProPublica.
I mean, that was a very important report. Did not have SAB review, just a group of people, which most of which had ties to the oil and gas industry. And so that report was used to justify exemption from hydraulic fracturing from the State Drinking Water Act.
The exemptions were later called the Halliburton loophole because of the efforts on the part of then-Vice President Dick Cheney, who was previously CEO of Halliburton, the oil field service company that patented hydraulic fracturing in the 1940s.
The politics surrounding the 2004 report could serve as a harbinger for what's to come. Under the Obama administration, the Science Advisory Board was able to save the report from political interference. But with the new Trump administration?
Whoever the administration is at the time pretty much dictates what the findings are going to be. There is really no wall between science and politics.
And we have only to watch the first few days of the Trump administration to see that threat in action. In those first few days, the EPA staff was ordered to freeze grants that fund things such as research, cleanups of toxic sites, and routine water quality testing.
The Trump team imposed a media blackout on the agency, prohibiting the EPA from issuing press releases, publishing blog updates, or even posting information on social media.
Furthermore, studies by the agency will have to be reviewed by political appointees. The fear that decisions won't be made based upon best science, but rather political factors, deeply troubles DiGiulio about what the future holds.
I think we're moving into it. A time period where I'm not sure science even matters anymore.
Many scientists share his concern, so much so that they are mobilizing on social media and are planning a march on Washington this spring.
Employees of federal agencies are heeding the call, too. After receiving notices from the administration to remove web pages and limit communication to the public, especially about climate change research and other science, anonymous staff and supporters created rogue Twitter accounts to get the word out.
Representing U.S. Fish and Wildlife, NASA, and even health agencies like the Food and Drug Administration and the CDC, Twitter accounts using hashtags resist or resistance are springing up to protest restrictions they view as nothing short of censorship.
The public has to be informed for a democratic society to properly function. And so there's a real concern over the shuttering of EPA in terms of its scientists being able to properly operate.
And it's not just the EPA. DiGiulio says cutting off information from other federal agencies like USGS, NASA, and USDA could endanger public health and the environment.
Science helps assess threats to our food supply, determine drug safety, track diseases, and document how our world is changing from global warming. But if truth is being muzzled, who's going to help us get the facts we need?
I think environmental groups, scientific groups, and academia are the last line of defense at this point. All the pillars are falling. Hopefully, things will improve, but I can't see that. And I think that the concerned scientists are basically the last line of defense.
For H2O Radio, I'm Franny Halperin.
And I'm Jamie Sudler.
H2O Radio comes to us from Denver. You can find more stories at h2oradio.org. A Democratic proposal initially passed the House Monday to ban corporal punishment in public schools and child care facilities that receive state money, Penta Brooklyn reports.
Colorado is one of 19 states where corporal punishment is not explicitly banned. The state system of local control leaves that decision up to individual school districts. Data shows that it is exceedingly rare and that no school district in Colorado currently allows it. So former school superintendent and Republican Representative Jim Wilson of Salida says, why create a new law?
What we have in place is working. I'm one of those folks that believe that if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's the argument he and other Republicans made. But Democratic sponsor Representative Susan Lontine of Denver says her proposal will reinforce best practices and believes there should be clarity in state statute to define corporal punishment.
I believe that it is best the state has a standard, and if school districts want to add to that, they are certainly free to.
It's not clear if the measure will pass the Republican-controlled Senate. Despite some Republican opposition on the House floor, the measure did clear an earlier committee with bipartisan support. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Groups advocating for hunters and anglers are crying foul over new rules passed in Congress that they say could pave the way for selling off the nation's public lands. Eric Galatis has more.
Hunting, fishing, conservation, and outdoor industry organizations and businesses are sending a letter to Congress in opposition to new rules they say pave the way for selling off or transferring the nation's publicly owned lands. Aaron Kendall with the National Wildlife Federation says normally Congress would have to account for any loss of income when selling off the public's property, but a new House rules package makes all revenues created on public lands null and void.
So it's a real cut to the heart of public lands and really kind of greases the skids for transferring or selling public lands.
Proponents of transferring lands to states argue the move would free industry from unnecessary red tape and boost state economies. Kendall says current federal management practices ensure that public assets will be available for future generations through its sustainable multiple-use policies, and notes states have a history of limiting public access. He notes the nation's $646 billion outdoor recreation economy, including more than 6 million jobs, depend on access to public lands. Kendall adds that Congress's efforts to undervalue lands owned by all Americans is out of step with public opinion.
You know, multiple polls have shown that folks value public lands. They don't want them transferred to the state. This really goes against public sentiment. And the fact that Congress did this on one of the first days in session tells you that they really are going against the public will.
Kendall says he hopes the letter will send a strong message to lawmakers that American sportsmen and women are strongly opposed to giving away public lands, which many consider a birthright. For KDNK, I'm Eric Galatis.
Valley Settlement Project announced it is moving forward as a standalone nonprofit after 5 years associated with the Manalis Fund. The organization is centered on bilingual, bicultural staff who work with families to engage hundreds of kids in early childhood development. Valley Settlement's adult program, Parent Mentor, trains parents to volunteer in elementary schools, supporting both kids and teachers. 300 parent mentors have provided over 50,000 volunteer hours in classrooms within the Roaring Fork School District.